Well, brethren, today is the 4th of July, in the year 2020. It's Independence Day. And this day marks 239 years since the signing of our Declaration of Independence, a document that was created by men who were living on this continent who decided that they were going to create a new independent nation. Here in our very own humble state of South Dakota, there's going to be a celebration. The President of the United States is in Rapid City. I believe the festivities actually began last night with fireworks and speeches. I think it's going to continue to go on today. How many of you have ever watched the national 4th of July Independence Day celebration in Washington? Maybe you've seen it on television, or it is spectacular. You know, I remember watching it as a boy on our small screen, and nowadays you can watch it, you know, many of us have massive televisions. I can only imagine that it's even more spectacular. But there are fireworks going off everywhere. There's dramatic and moving speeches, and they will read the writings of our founding fathers, of those who fought and died so that this nation might become. Often the fireworks are conducted in time and in sync with live symphonies. There are literally cannons going off, and we hear things like, you know, by the rocket's red glare, and they'll show the Star-Spangled Banner, our American flag, with the fireworks exploding over it. It is a moving thing to watch. I believe that exact type of celebration is what's going to be happening tonight in our own state, just about 360 miles that way, I guess. They're expecting somewhere around 7,500 people to be at Mount Rushmore. Again, there will be fireworks, the loud noises, there will be orchestras, there will be voices lifted in song. There will be voices given in speeches. There are those who will lift their voices in celebration. And I'm sure there will be some who will lift their voices in protest. But there will be a great lifting up, an exaltation, if you will, a great noise for freedom to ring. Some of you will have heard that, those words before, that phrase, let freedom ring. That is something which has been a part of this nation, of the United States, since the very beginning. Before there was a revolution, before when people were just beginning to come to these shores, they had a dream and a hope that there would be a new place, a new land, and that freedom would ring throughout it. Those who came to this country had that vision in their hearts and in their minds from the very beginning. Many of those who came here, most of them, were very faithful. They believed in God and in His Word, and that it was true and powerful. And they were fleeing religious persecution in Europe and in England. You read the letters, you read the speeches, you read the sermons that were given. Over and over again, they would speak of the similarities of the children of Israel coming out of Egypt. And they had that image in their mind of people leaving bondage seeking for a promised land, being led by God. That is, after all, what God has done with his people. I want to turn to Leviticus 25. This is where God gave his law to the children of Israel. He had brought them out of a land where they had grown from a family with 12 descendants to tribes. 12 tribes, and they became a nation. But a nation who needed to be given instruction in how to be free. After God gave them the commandments and his holy days, he gave them blessings on how it was that they were to live their lives in every way. Leviticus 25 and verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then the land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather its fruit. But in the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord." This follows very specifically the weekly Sabbath. 6 days we work. We do everything that we have to do. But on that seventh day, that Sabbath, is a day of rest. A day to remember our Creator, the one who's given us all the blessings that we have. And he's showing them this, that in the years that you are in this promised land, you will do this. He says, "You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard." We live in South Dakota. There's crops growing up just, you know, a couple hundred feet away from us. A field full of corn and beans. How many of you garden? Just a little bit. Yeah, you garden, got some plants, maybe just flowers. We have farmers in our midst who rely on the crops and on the hay and their cattle every year to survive. Imagine a year where, you know, you just don't work. A year, you know, if you're a farmer, you know, I wish Terry and Linda Johnson were here today. Ask Terry what it'd be like to just, I'm not going to plant this year. I'm going to go fishing. I'm going to read a little more. Catch up on some of those projects I've been wanting to do. And I don't have to worry about it. It's okay. I don't have to make my living this year by the sweat of my brow. And crops are still going to come up. There's still going to be fruit. And I can eat as much of it as I want. There'll be plenty. There'll be plenty for everyone. But I don't have to labor at it this year. You know, I think so often we think of that seventh year as, oh, it's a starvation year. Boy, it's going to be tough. How are you going to make it? But God says that's not the way it's going to be. It's a blessing, just as this Sabbath day is for us today. In verse 5, it says, "When it grows of its own accord, of your harvest you shall not reap, nor gather the grapes of your untended vine, for it is the year of rest for the land." It's not about gathering it up and selling it or sending it off somewhere. "And the Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you, for you, for your male and female servants, your hired man, and even the stranger who dwells with you. There will be enough for everyone." for your livestock and the beasts in your land. All its produce shall be for food. And it's not a year of starvation. It's a year of rest and of blessing and plenty. You know, what's one of the symbols which has been associated with our nation of blessings and food? You know, the cornucopia? That horn that shows food pouring out of it, fruit and grain and breads. That's what this is. It's the blessing of the promised land. And now he goes on. In verse 8, he expands on this concept of the seventh year of Sabbath rest. And he says, "And now you shall count seven Sabbaths of years for yourself." That's seven times 7 years. So you have these 7 year Sabbaths, Sabbath rest, and you count seven of those, seven in a row. "And the time of the seven Sabbaths of years shall be to you 49 years. But then in the 50th year, something spectacular happens. And you shall cause the trumpet, that is the shofar, of the Jubilee." This is the Jubilee year. And that word is teruah. How many of you remember the sermon I gave on trumpets last year? Of the teruah. It is that great trumpet blast of the return of God, of Christ, to this earth. And it is a great noise. It is the sounding of trumpets, both the silver and of the horn. It is a lifting up and a shouting of voices in victory and joy. That is what he says this year of Jubilee is to be. "You shall sound it on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement." There's an atoning for sins. Sins that are not only the individual, but of the entire nation. "And you shall make the trumpet to sound throughout all your land. All the people shall hear this." And in verse 10, "And you shall consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you, and each of you shall return to his possession, and each of you shall return to his family." Can you imagine what that must have been like, brethren? And it wasn't just for the Israelites. It's for everyone in the promised land. Land was given to each tribe in Israel. They all had a homeland. And then land was given to each family in the promised land. Each family had its own land, its own place. And they were allowed to do what they wanted to with it. Maybe they decided they really didn't want to farm. Maybe they didn't really want to be a shepherd. They wanted to go into one of the cities. They could sell that to someone else and go and do what they wanted to with it. And the person who bought it, they got to keep it for 49 years and do what they wanted to with it. Now, some people also made different choices, different decisions. And just as we know, the choices that we make in this life are not always good. Maybe they got in trouble and they sold their land, or they went into debt to do something, which God told them, don't do that. And so they lost their possessions. And back then, if you were really in trouble, and you had a debt that even your land couldn't cover, your possessions wouldn't make null and void, you sold yourself into slavery. In that 50th year of Jubilee, every person was freed, both Israelite and any other captive in Israel. Every inhabitant was allowed to return to his own land. Every slave was freed. Everything that had been lost was redeemed. Kids, grandkids who'd maybe never even seen the home place suddenly went home. That was the law of God. It's amazing because God's law has always been about freedom. It has always been about free. It is how God gave his freedom to his people in his kingdom, the promised land. His law has always been about freedom. And when they declared that day, there was a great teruah, and freedom rang throughout the land. Everyone was again made free. The passage in verse 10. God tells them, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. That brief passage is inscribed on one of our iconic symbols of freedom for the United States of America. How many of you are familiar with this symbol that hangs in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania? It's called the Liberty Bell. This is what is inscribed upon that bell. To let freedom ring, to proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. And when I was a boy, being a child of the 70s, in 1976, it was the 200th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, the 200th anniversary of our nation. And I remember the symbol of the Liberty Bell being everywhere. They had pictures of it in my classrooms in grade school and in the hallways. It'd be on commercials. They would talk about it with the 4th of July. You could buy postage stamps with the Liberty Bell on it. And it was famous. It had that crack in it. You remember? In fact, you could buy mementos of the Liberty Bell. My grandmother bought little Liberty Bells for all the grandkids. I had mine until I think I was in my mid-20s. I don't know what happened to it. But you could ring it. It worked. It was a sign of our freedom. Now, most people associate that Liberty Bell with the 4th of July, with the signing of the Declaration of Independence. But, you know, it wasn't actually rung on July the 4th. The Declaration of Independence had been worked on by men who we call our founding fathers in the month leading up to it. And it wasn't signed until July 4th. But they didn't make the announcement yet because their assembly was illegal. They were still citizens of the British Empire, of the Crown of England. If they had known what these men were gathered together to do, to propose, it would have been sedition against the crown, a treasonable hanging offense. And they knew that. They absolutely knew what they were risking. And so from the time that they signed it, copies were made, and they went throughout the country. Those 13 colonies. They went to the schoolhouses. They went to the churches. They went to the county seats, to all the public places. and there was a ringing out of bells. And people gathered in to hear what was new, what was going on, what declaration needed to be made, what announcement was so important that everyone would gather together. And so on July the 8th, the Liberty Bell was rang, and people gathered, and for the very first time in our country, they heard the reading of the Declaration of Independence. We do remember Philadelphia as a pivotal place in our history of freedom. In fact, it's called the birthplace of the United States. It's called the birthplace of modern democracy. And most people don't realize that that was not the first time that the Liberty Bell was rang. It actually happened long before that. In the mid-1600s in England, there was a man named Admiral Sir William Penn. He was famous. He was a great sailor, soldier, and politician. He was a man of the people and a man of the crown. He served England and made a name for himself, and in fact, he gave great wealth to the British Empire and defended the British Empire during the Dutch and English War. He served England during the Revolution with Oliver Cromwell, and he continued to serve England during the restoration of the king. England owed a great debt to Sir William Penn. And they knew that. In fact, they decided that they were going to make restitution to him. But the nation of England owed so much, not only for their own survival, but literally their wealth, that they could not afford to pay him back. There wasn't enough money in the coffers to pay this man back for all that they owed him. And so they decided to give him land. Again, he was knighted, but he wasn't going to be given a baronhood or a lordship. They decided to give him a charter of land in the New World, and they called it Pennsylvania. Penn, because that was his name, and Sylvania, because that was a word meaning forested and treed and with leaves. And this would rectify this huge debt that they owed this man. And so it was agreed upon, and they were going forward with it, and it was being drawn up. And all of a sudden, Admiral Sir William Penn died. And yet the debt was still there because he had an inheritor. He was also named William Penn. But this William Penn was a very different man than his father. He was a Quaker. Now, admittedly, some would say he wasn't a very good Quaker because he was a zealot. In fact, during the time that the crown was trying to figure out how to pay back Sir William Penn, his son was in prison because he led a revolt against the Church of England. He publicly proclaimed that the state had no business telling everyone what religion they had to be. He risked everything. He was willing to give up not only the wealth of his family, not only the respect of his father, but his own freedom in his belief that the law of God superseded the laws of man, and that the laws of man could not dictate someone's faith. But what were they going to do? He's the son. They've got to pay this debt off. Now, in some ways, this may have come as a relief. Whew, Well, not only will we relinquish this debt, but he's going to be on the other side of the world. So they gave it to him, and he went. Now, William Penn is known because he had a dream. Some would call it his holy experiment. That he saw this opportunity, again, very much as the promised land, just as they were told about in the Bible with the children of Israel, and that it would be a new land, a land where people could grow and thrive and have religious freedom. And the new land would be based not on the crown and the authority of England, but on the laws of God. Now, for 2 years, he came, he established all of Pennsylvania, the charter that was given to him, the land. He gathered in all the different little colonies, the different little gatherings and groups, and he brought them under his authority. And he established, again, the freedom of religion, which you'd think that would be great because most of the colonies that were there, many of the people were fleeing religious persecution in Europe and in England. But you see, in each of their own little colonies, in each of their own little villages and townships, they had one religion. And maybe it was Catholic. Maybe it was Protestant. Maybe it was Church of England. Maybe it was, you know, Methodist or Quaker. But in that village, you had to be whatever they were. But under William Penn's authority, he said, no. It will be religious freedom. You know, we thought that, well, religious freedom was religious freedom for everyone. But if you were a Jew trying to find a place to live at that time, good luck. So he did away with that. He laid out Philadelphia, a city of brotherly love. One of the things which Quakers, especially at that time, were known for was that God is not the author of confusion, but of order. And he laid out the city that he wanted to build. He mapped it all out. And it was in squares. And it was straight roads and wide paths, which, you know, would fit just perfectly in South Dakota, right? We like our blocks and our organizations, and it's square. But in Europe, that was unheard of. They built wherever they built, and the roads between buildings were winding and twisting and narrow and dark. There were pathways and alleys, and it was this tangled mess. People were fascinated by it. They couldn't believe that this was happening in the New World. Philadelphia, in its time, was the fastest growing city in the world. It was just growing by leaps and bounds, and all of the world was watching this holy experiment by William Penn. Well, after a few years, it was doing so well that there was another lord in England who decided that, in fact, most of Pennsylvania should be his. So William Penn left everything just so, gave them instructions on how he expected things to run, and he boarded a ship and he sailed back to England to defend his inheritance, his charter. He was gone for about 15 years. Now, during that time, you guys are familiar with the old saying, when the cat's away, the mice will play. Yeah. So many different people started coming in, and they were like, well, we didn't really like his authority, and he's over there anyway. We're going to do what we want. And it's funny, because if you look at the old city of Philadelphia, it's laid out and ordered, wide roads, wide streets. But everything that was built after that kind of started to do what they were used to. And it kind of became this tangled mess again. And now there were these narrow alleys and byways and corridors. And one of the things that William Penn wanted to avoid was that in Europe and in England, that was where vice took place. The buildings were so close together in the streets and the alleys that it was dark almost all the time. And that was where sin happened. That was where the illegal trade was done, both human and of corruption. And that began to filter in. It was, again, after 15 years that he returned to the city of brotherly love, and he was shocked and dismayed at what he found. He was so discouraged by it. He was like, but this is not the plan. This is not the way it was supposed to be. And in spite of what he did, people didn't really want to hear him anymore. They kind of established their own groups and their own ways, and they were fractured. And so he decided that he would return to England, where even before he was doing quite well in the court of, I believe it was King James. But before he left, he decided that he was going to give them law. And so William Penn wrote the Constitution of Pennsylvania. He laid it out in a way that was so spectacular and so closely followed the example that God gave to the children of Israel that it is in fact the form of government which we based our own constitution on and our own government on. Two houses elected. It was the first proposed government that truly reflected democracy. Thomas Jefferson said that William Penn was the greatest lawgiver the world had ever seen. And then he sailed back to England, and they were left to their own devices. And being men, they came up with men's government, which isn't God's government. It's not perfect. But it was so much better than anything back in Europe. So much better than anything in England. And they began to govern themselves. Now on the 50th anniversary, again a year of jubilee from the creation of the Pennsylvania Constitution, it was decided that they would commission a great bell. And it would be hung in the State House. And again, it would be rung to gather all the people together for any of the announcements, the proclamations, the important things that everyone needed to have. And so in 1753, the bell was brought back, or had been created in England, brought in, and they hung it up in the tower. It weighed 1 ton, biggest bell they could imagine. And so to celebrate, they rang it, and it immediately cracked down the middle. And so they said, well, all right. They took it down. They sent it back. They had it melted down and recast. And then brought back, and they hung it back up in the tower, and they rang it. And this time it rang. And you know what? The people didn't like it. They covered their ears, said they didn't like the sound. It's funny because when I studied this, I thought, how much this reminded me of the children of Israel. You know, they've come out of Egypt. They're standing in the shadow of Mount Sinai. And God comes to give them his word and direction and blessings. And there's the smoke and the clouds. And he speaks and the voice rings out. And all the children cover their ears and fall back. They're like, oh, we don't like this. So it's what they did in Philadelphia. They said it was too loud, or they didn't like the tone. And so they took it down again, melted it, recast it, and hung it. And then they began to use it. Now there were still a lot of people who complained about it, didn't like it. Did it really have to be that big? Does it really have to be that noisy? Does it really have to be that tone? I mean, couldn't we make it a happier-sounding tone? But it was the bell that rang out in 1776 on July the 8th and gathered all the people of Philadelphia and many of them from the surrounding communities in Pennsylvania to come and hear the Declaration of Independence. And they proclaimed liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. Now the bell was called the State House Bell. Back then they didn't actually call it the Liberty Bell. It wasn't called the Liberty Bell until 50 years after the Revolution. Because remember, in 1776, the United States said, "We're independent." And King George said, "Oh, really? I don't believe you are. You are still subject of the crown." And there was a war that had to be fought. A war that was the first truly great war on these shores. And as we know, all gave some. And some gave all. We look at the history of those men who risked their lives and fortunes and families to become signers of that Declaration of Independence. And many of them gave it. And so, 50 years after the Revolutionary War, after the United States had been declared sovereign and free, a jubilee passed. And then there were a group of people in Pennsylvania who also believed in freedom. They were not revolutionists. They were abolitionists. They were people who believed that what was written on the bell was true, to proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof, regardless of what race they were. They believed that all the slaves in the United States needed to be freed, and we needed to rectify this sin which was so pervasive in this new promised land. So they are the ones who first called it the Liberty Bell. And they are the ones who changed that. It's interesting because just 2 years after Philadelphia was established, 150 African slaves were brought into Philadelphia and sold. The first slaves into Pennsylvania. And most of them were purchased by Quakers. Because it wasn't just about religious freedom, it was about opportunity and wealth. And you had to cut all of that out of the wilderness. And it's cheaper to purchase a person and have them do it. How many of you know what or have heard of Germantown, Pennsylvania? Yeah, there's a few. Germantown, Pennsylvania was established by German Quakers, and they wrote up the Germantown Pact agreement against slavery just a couple years after Philadelphia was founded, by a gentleman who was also a Quaker from Germany, who said, "Wait a minute. This is not Christian. This is not of God, to enslave people. But even more specifically, to enslave one race. You're not selling yourselves into indentured servitude. You're just slaving a people because of their skin color and where they're from." This nation is not perfect. It wasn't perfect back then. You know, William Penn wanted it to be that way so badly. He believed that it would be a nation of God. That's what he wanted. That's what all our forefathers wanted when they signed that Declaration of Independence. They all believed in the providence of God, in his blessings and freedom, that it would ring out throughout the nation. It's still a nation of men. Turn with me to Psalms 33. Psalms 33. And we'll look at verse 11. The counsel of the Lord stands forever. This is his counsel. This is his admonition. This is his word, his commandments, his statutes, his law. It stands forever. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And his law, his word, his blessings are eternal. The plans of his heart to all generations, every age. In verse 12, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. It's not just America or the British Commonwealth. It's any nation who views God as supreme. The people he has chosen as his own inheritance, those upon whom God places his name because they declare that God is Lord. The Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of men. From the place of his dwelling, he looks on all the inhabitants of the earth. And he fashions their hearts individually. You know, one of the fallacies in our nation is to look at the United States and say, well, we're God's nation. That's not what he says. He says he looks on our hearts individually, regardless of our heritage, but because of the spirit that is within us. And he says he considers all their works. If we're not doing the work of God, then how do we say we're his? Isn't that what Christ had to tell the Pharisees? America isn't God's nation. And I hate saying that because it sounds so unpatriotic. But this nation was founded by those who wanted this to be God's nation, who desired that more than anything, that this would be a new land and a new beginning where people would obey God more than themselves and more than others. They established that government and our laws in the shadow of Zion to be patterned after the words of Christ. President Andrew Jackson said this, "The Bible is the rock on which our republic rests." That's our foundation. In spite of what people try to say, in spite of how they try to throw it out, you just have to read the history. Brethren, we are so blessed. We have been blessed for 239 years as a nation. We've been blessed in ways that we can't even imagine because we haven't seen what it's like to not be blessed. But the nation which turns away from God will have those blessings removed. If we look again in Psalms 33, but we look up just a little bit to verse 10. It says, "The Lord brings the counsel of the nations to nothing." All those plans of, well, we're going to establish our own rules, our own laws. We're not going to let any religion or any God dictate it. Have you seen one of those civilizations that's lasted? He makes the plans of peoples of no effect. But he says, if you will have me as your God, you will be blessed. But if you won't, then nothing you try to build will last. Brethren, we see a lot of stuff happening in our world right now. We see chaos and division, fighting. People take the flag, Old Glory, and they burn it, they stomp on it. They scream out their hatred of everything that America was and what it is today. And yet, it's funny because even those who hate America, even those who want to completely wipe away everything America has been, you know what's interesting? There's not a single one of them who wants to leave. Not a single one. They're not leaving. All of them want to stay here. They all want to be right here. Brethren, this is a day of independence. It is a day of freedom. And people are going to celebrate that and rejoice in it. But there is a day of freedom which is coming. A day of freedom that we're waiting for and hoping for and praying for. Where all of mankind will rejoice. A great teruah and a noise and a shout, and freedom will ring out. Isaiah 61 and verse 1. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the reopening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord, that final year of Jubilee, and the day of vengeance of our God, and to comfort all who mourn. Brethren, we're so blessed to be in this nation, to have the freedom that we have right now today, to be in South Dakota, to be able to come here and gather and have a Sabbath service on this day, where in other parts of this world, Christians are being killed. You know that in even just other parts of this country, we're some of the few that are actually having services today, that are allowed to, that are able to. So just right here in this little building, we are incredibly blessed. Today our nation celebrates freedom, independence. Let us give thanks for this nation that we live in, and for the nation, the kingdom that we're waiting for. Let's give thanks for the freedom that we have now, and for the freedom that will someday be revealed to the whole world. Brethren, we're waiting for that day of salvation. And that is the day when freedom will ring. Not just in this land, but in every land. I want to close with a performance by the Soldiers Chorus of the United States Army Field Band. They are performing their rendition of our nation's national hymn, My Country, 'Tis of Thee.
the final song of the day. And this song is going to be page 101, which is Go Ye Therefore Into All the World, because that's where we're going to be headed after we leave today. And the world's a crazy place, but we're not told to hide from the world or to escape it, but to go into it. So this is some instruction that Jesus gave his disciples and that we can learn from. And then after this, we'll have the closing prayer by Mr. James Auk. 101, Go Ye Therefore Into All the World. Out for the closing prayer.
Our great eternal Father, we are very thankful. It is a good day, and we only have you to thank for that. We're very thankful for the words that were spoken today, for this building, air-conditioned, cool, peaceful, that we can assemble together. We're thankful for the freedoms that we have. We're thankful for this nation, the abundance that we can only imagine. We're thankful for the food that we have in abundance. We ask your blessing upon it. We ask that you would continue to be with us, watch over, protect us spiritually, physically as we go forward in this week. Watch over and protect us all and give us wisdom and guidance to do the right things and make the right decisions. Again, we are just very thankful for all these things now. Ask your blessing on the close of the service now and all the things that go on afterwards, and just ask this now in Jesus' name. Amen.